This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Exodus. And now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Exodus, chapters 21 through 24, with today's study.
Verse 30, if there is imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life whatever is imposed on it. Now, the ox's owner can commute the death sentence by paying damages for the harm the animal caused. Whether it has gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this judgment, it shall be done to him. If the ox gores a male or female servant, he shall give to that master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. And notice there, the price for a slave was 30 shekels of silver. And what's interesting about that is the amount that Judas chose to receive in order to betray Jesus Christ. Matthew 26, verse 15 tells us that Judas sold his Lord for 30 pieces of silver, the price of a slave. He had very little regard for Jesus' life, didn't he? And if a man opens a pit, or if a man digs a pit, I guess it could be a barbecue pit, and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls in it, the owner of the pit shall make it good. He shall give money to their owner, but the dead animal shall be his. In other words, the disposal is his problem. And if one man's ox hurts another's so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money from it, and the dead ox they shall also divide. Or if it was known that the ox tended to thrust in time past, and its owner has not kept it confined, you knew this ox could do such a thing, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall be his own. Now you read about one man's ox goring another man's ox, and you're wondering tonight, what in the world does this have to do with me? But these laws are extremely applicable to us. They teach us that we are responsible for our property, whether it's an ox or a pit bull or an open pit, or a sports car, or the family car that you allow your kid to drive. People are held accountable not only for the harm they cause, but for the injury that's caused by the possessions and the people that are under their authority. See, the intent behind this law is still extremely applicable. Chapter 22. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and slaughters it or sells it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. In other words, the thief doesn't just pay for what he stole. He pays damages for the trouble that he caused the victim. If the thief is found breaking in and he is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt for his bloodshed. In other words, if a stranger breaks into my house to steal from me, it's my right to protect myself and my family and my possessions. And under God's law, if I pull out my shotgun and blow him to bits, don't worry, I'll witness to him until the paramedics get there. But if I do that, I have the right to defend myself. But notice in verse 3, if someone breaks into my house one night, rips me off, I discover it the next morning, I can't just track the guy down and shoot him after the fact. We're told if the sun has risen on him, no, the threat's passed, you're not, he stole something from you, but you know, your family's not in danger, then you can't just track him down. If the sun has risen on him, there shall be guilt for his bloodshed. He shall make full restitution. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. Once the immediate danger to my family has passed, then I can't just run out and kill him for thievery. Notice, too, the emphasis on restitution. If the thief couldn't pay for the damage he caused, he was sold as a slave, and he was made to work off the amount that he owed. We're told, if the theft is certainly found alive in his hand, whether it is an ox or a donkey or sheep, he shall restore double. And again, notice nothing is said about prison. Isn't that interesting? Today, somebody steals something from somebody, we throw them into prison. The victim probably never gets paid back. There's no restitution. This says nothing about prison. The emphasis in God's law is on restitution, on repairing of damage. The thief has to pay a punitive damage in the amount double to the person that he's harmed. Today, our courts just toss the thief in jail. He loses his ability to work, and the victim never gets compensated. I think God had a lot of wisdom in this law. Verse 5. If a man causes a field or a vineyard to be grazed and lets loose his animal and it feeds in another man's field, I mean eats up all his green grass, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and the best of his own vineyard. If fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that stacked grain, standing grain, or the field is consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. If a man delivers to his neighbor money or articles to keep, and it is stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. And notice, too, the amount of damage is specified. It's just not left up to the whim of a judge or a jury. If the thief is not found, then the master of the house shall be brought to the judges to see whether he has put his hand into his neighbor's goods. In other words, if you agree to oversee your neighbor's stuff, and now their stuff turns up missing, being the caretaker, you're responsible. And it's appropriate that you be scrutinized to see if you've stolen or if you've mismanaged your neighbor's goods. I think this is the first mention of what we might call white-collar crime. Here's a manager who's gone bad. He's embezzled someone else's funds, a stockbroker that's turned into a thief. Verse 9 establishes the need for tort law. Offenses occur that are not necessarily criminal offenses, and yet justice requires a remedy, and so judges were appointed to serve in this role. He says, for any kind of trespass, whether it concerns an ox, a donkey, a sheep, or clothing, or for any kind of lost thing which another claims to be his, the cause of both parties shall come before the judges, and whomever the judges condemn shall pay double to his neighbor. If the ownership of the article is in question, then the parties in the dispute both present their cases and then the judge makes a decision. Now, if a man delivers to his neighbor a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any animal to keep, and it dies, is hurt, or driven away, no one seeing it, then an oath of the Lord shall be between them both, that he has not put his hand into his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept that, and he shall not make it good. God's law is fair. And here it acknowledges that accidents do happen. And a person who was acting in good faith should not be held responsible for a loss that was accidental. Say you're keeping your neighbor's parakeet, and your cat eats it. You're not liable. Your neighbor should have known that you had a cat, should have known they were taking a risk by letting you keep their parakeet. Verse 12. But if, in fact, it is stolen from him, he shall make restitution to the owner of it. If it is torn to pieces by a beast, then he shall bring it as evidence, and he shall not make good what was torn. You couldn't help it. You couldn't help that a mountain lion saw your neighbor's poodle in your backyard, decided to have it for breakfast. You just come clean, you present the evidence, here's the carcass. Poor poodle. Doggone. And if a man borrows anything from his neighbor and it becomes injured or dies, the owner of it not being with it, he shall surely make it good. Now if you borrow your neighbor's lawnmower, and while in your possession it breaks down, then it's your responsibility to have that mower repaired. Now, if you go over and you see in advance that it needs repairs and it's about to fall apart, then just don't borrow it in the first place. He says, if its owner was with it, he shall not make it good. If it was hired, it came for its hire. In other words, if you lease the equipment, the astronomical price you paid to lease it should cover the repairs. Verse 16 is an important law, very applicable for us today. If a man entices a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he shall surely pay the bride price for her to be his wife. Notice this. Just because they have sex doesn't make them married. Now, I got to tell you, if I've talked to one, I've talked to 100. Couples who were living together, who had the nerve to say to me, "Pastor Sandy, well, in God's eyes, we're already married." No, you're not. You can't say that. God says you're not married, for verse 16 states clearly that you aren't married until the proper legalities are fulfilled. In ancient Israel, it was the payment of a bridal price. That was the legal requirement for marriage. In America today, it's standing before a pastor or standing before a justice of the peace and exchanging vows. That becomes the legal requirements for marriage. So just because you're shacking up together doesn't mean you're married. Verse 17. How many of you have ever been asked that question, or you've ever confronted somebody who made that statement? Now you know in the Bible where you can go and you can show them that they're wrong. Verse 17. If her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money according to the bride price of virgins. In ancient times, you see, each bride sort of came with a dowry. I mean, every bride was a mail order bride, you could say. Before you married her, you had to pay for her. You had to pay the family bridal price. And a virgin bride was more desirable, and so she came at a higher price. In this case, since the young man stole the woman's virginity, then her father had the right to expect him to pay the customary dowry for a virgin bride. Here's the point. Verses 16 and 17 basically teach us that under God's law, there was no such thing as casual sex. That's what these verses should say to us tonight. If a man had sex with a woman, he was expected to marry her and take over responsibility for her care. You know, today men have sex with women and all it costs them is the price of dinner. And girls, when you give yourself away to a guy and you expect so little in return, it only cheapens your own value and degrades your own self-worth. Let me encourage all of the single men and women here tonight, never give away your sexuality without expecting a lifetime commitment in return. That's what you deserve and nothing less. Wait for marriage. The next few verses establish capital crimes. Verse 18. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. Whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. He who sacrifices to any god except to the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed. In God's eyes, witchcraft and bestiality and idolatry warranted the death penalty. Apparently, the people who had sunk to such depths of depravity were a menace to society, and the risk of leaving them around, I mean, it posed a great danger to the people who were subject to them in the midst of their rehabilitation. And so God prescribed the death penalty. Now, today we have something available to us that they didn't have available to them. And that's the power of Jesus Christ, the grace of God, the power of the Holy Spirit, the ability of God to change a life. We as Christians have all partaken of that grace, and we've partaken of that power. And so thus, and perhaps some of us were involved in witchcraft, or we're involved in some of these idolatrous practices. Aren't we glad that God extended grace toward us? You see, back in those days, there was no grace. There was no power of the Holy Spirit to effect change in their lives. But today, we have that available to us, and therefore, I think our thinking should be a bit different on this. Verse 21. You shall neither mistreat a stranger nor oppress him, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. A good measure of your character is how you treat a stranger. Did you know that? Do we reach out to people who are not like us, or do we stick with the clique? God says, reach out. You shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child. If you afflict them in any way and they cry at all to me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath will become hot, and I will kill you with the sword. Your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless. God promises to defend the defenseless. God is seriously for the underdog. God has a special place in his heart for the neediest people. He says he will personally protect the widow and the orphan. If you lend money to any of my people who are poor among you, you shall not be like a money lender to him. You shall not charge him interest. Don't try to make a buck off a brother who's on hard times. Be kind. Be generous. Don't be greedy. If you ever take your neighbor's garment as a pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. For that is his only covering. It is his garment for his skin. What will he sleep in? How's he going to stay warm if you take his coat from him? Be merciful. And it will be that when he cries to me, I will hear, for I am gracious. Verse 28, you shall not revile God nor curse a ruler of your people. What comes out of your mouth, especially towards God and the authorities that he has set over you, are extremely important. And speaking of honoring God, you shall not delay to offer the first of your ripe produce and your juices. One of the best ways to honor God is to pay your tithes in a regular and in a timely manner. Verse 29, the firstborn of your sons you shall give to me. The redemption of the firstborn was an offering that God required. Likewise, you shall do with your oxen and your sheep. It shall be with its mother 7 days. On the eighth day, you shall give it to me. The way they did this is you would give your firstborn of your flock to God, and then you would redeem it or buy it back. It wasn't like the priest was hoarding up sheep or something. It was just an offering you made to God, and then you bought it back, and then the proceeds then went into the temple service and so forth. Verse 31, and you shall be holy men to me. You shall not eat meat torn by beasts in the field. You shall not throw it to the dogs. In other words, don't just be a pig, man. Don't just go in and eat like an animal. Humans should take time to prepare their foods in a healthy manner. Cook the meat. Don't just tear into an animal and start eating it raw. Don't pull off the side of the road and pig it out on roadkill or something. In other words, in our sexuality and in our consumption, humans should be holy. In other words, we should be different than the animals. Being a party animal is not a compliment. As far as God is concerned, it's a disgrace. He wants us to be civilized, not savage. He wants us to be more like Him than like the animals. We're made in God's image. The first 9 verses of chapter 23 discuss a number of things: slander, perjury, bribery, Good Samaritan laws, the Sabbath laws, 3 annual feasts, and so forth. We're going to fly through this. Chapter 23, you shall not circulate a false report. Don't slander. Do not put your hand, don't gossip either. Don't circulate a false report. And how do you know it's false? You don't, do you? Half the time you don't know what you hear is true or false, so just keep your mouth shut. Don't circulate a false report. It's gossip. It damages people. It destroys people's lives. Idle words, false rumors. Don't do it. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. Don't take a bribe. Don't perjure your testimony. Be a righteous witness. Be a person of your word. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil. Now, you teenagers need to hear this. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil. Develop the strength of character to go against the flow. Resist the pack mentality, the mob mentality. If everybody else jumps off a cliff, I hope you're not stupid enough to join them. Just because everybody else is rushing out to do evil, you don't have to follow the crowd. You can stand up. You can go against the flow. You can be different. Remember, toilet paper goes with the flow. You don't want to be like toilet paper. Nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. Again, be a truthful witness. Don't try to distort or misshape the facts. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. And you shouldn't side against the poor man, but just because he's poor, you shouldn't side in his favor either. Let truth be our determinator. Verse 4, if you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall be glad you saw your enemy's ox going astray, and you should just push him further in that direction and laugh as you do. Is that what it says? No. If you see your enemy's ox going astray, you shall surely bring it back to him again. Isn't this what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount? Love your enemies. Bless those who curse you and do good for those who hate you. Here God gives Moses a few practical examples of that admonition. If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying under its burden, and you would refrain from helping it, you shall surely help him with it. Hey, real love expresses itself in action. It takes the time to help, to roll up its shirt sleeves and help that person. Who knows? You may be going home tonight, and you may be seeing that person that you despise. They may pull off the side of the road changing a tire. This gets real practical. What are you going to do? Drive in a puddle real close to them? Splash them? Are you going to pull off the side and help your neighbor, help your enemy? Love those who hate you and harm you. Jesus said that. Verse 6, you shall not pervert the judgment of your poor in his dispute. Keep yourself far from a false matter. Don't get caught up in somebody else's stuff, man. Don't get caught up in somebody else's sin. Do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not justify the wicked. And you shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the discerning and perverts the words of the righteous. Also, you shall not oppress a stranger, for you know the heart of a stranger because you were strangers in the land of Egypt. He goes back to that. Now 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its produce. But the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. In like manner you shall do with your vineyard and your olive grove. Now, not only were the Hebrews to rest every 7 days, they were also to let the land rest every seventh year. In Leviticus, God promises his people that the land would yield 3 times the crop in the sixth year to more than make up for the lack of the harvest in the seventh year. In that seventh year, the poor could go out and just collect the residue. The animals could even go out and eat what was left on the vine. It was a great form of welfare for the people. You know, it's interesting that this idea of letting the land rest once every 7 years, today's agriculturalists, the experts in the field, acknowledge the wisdom of God's Old Testament plan. Today's methods of crop rotation that are practiced in all modern farming are based on this principle. Allowing the land to rest once every 7 years replenishes itself of nutrients and minerals. Verse 12, 6 days you shall do your work, and on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may rest, and the son of your female servant and the stranger may be refreshed. And this is why Chick-fil-A is making such a killing. Because their workers are refreshed. Letting them rest 1 day out of 7. But God's law, and you suffer the consequences. Resting 1 day in 7 is not only holy, but it's also healthy. And in all that I have said to you, be circumspect and make no mention of the name of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth. In other words, be fiercely loyal to God, so much so that you don't even mention the gods of the pagans.
That concludes the teaching portion of today's broadcast with Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Join us next time as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the book of Exodus. You can learn more about Pastor Sandy by visiting our website. The web address is sandyadams.org. That's sandyadams.org. Simply click on the radio program option from the main menu. When you click on the radio program option at the website, you'll find today's message and many other messages from Pastor Sandy. You can download today's teaching, listen again, subscribe to the podcast, or browse the archive of messages. If you live in the Stone Mountain, Georgia area, or will be passing through, you can get directions and times of the services. Again, the website is sandyadams.org. We love hearing how God's Word touches the lives of His followers. So please log on to sandyadams.org and click on the Contact Us link and send us a note about how today's message has encouraged you. Your feedback helps us tremendously. Once again, you've been listening to the Daily Bible Teaching Program of Pastor Sandy Adams. Please tune in next time as we continue through the book of Exodus. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.